Ladies and gentlemen, are we on? That sounds better. Before we begin our board meeting, I'd like to turn some time to our director for just some information, which is good. Information is information, right?
Well, members of the board, I'm Alan Matheson, the executive director of the Department of Environmental Quality, and glad I get this opportunity because we don't do it enough, and that is thank you for your service. You don't get a lot for this other than the satisfaction, I think, of knowing that you're playing a really important role in protecting the drinking water systems of our state. And I know that I and the other people in this state really appreciate the effort you put in. Well, you all know that our long-tenured and esteemed division director, Ken Bousfield, retired at the end of last year. Ken's with us today. Always good to see him. See, he hasn't figured out that he doesn't have to come into the office. It kind of became habit after 40 years, so we're trying to tell him to stay home. But I am very happy to be able to announce that we have hired the new director of the Division of Water Quality, Marie Owens. Now, I'm sorry, did I say water quality?
You did.
Division of Drinking Water.
You made someone very nervous.
I know. Yeah.
It's okay, Walt.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for the correction. So many of you know Marie. She's been in the water community for 20 years. She has a degree from Utah State in environmental engineering, a master's in public administration. She's worked as a process engineer for the Metropolitan Water District of Salt Lake and Sandy. And for the last 10 years or so, she's been director of the Division of Water Quality in the Water Quality Division at Jordan Valley Water Conservancy District. So she's been very much involved in the issues surrounding water infrastructure and delivery. She's worked in leadership positions in the American Water Works Association. She's co-founder of Women of Water in Utah. So, been very much involved, and I think will be a tremendous asset to us and to you. And she'll be starting officially next Monday. No, a week from this Monday, the 23rd. And we're looking forward to that. So if you wouldn't mind, maybe we can have Marie just say hi. Or anything else you'd like to add.
Well, I'm really excited to take on this new challenge and to work with you guys. Also, just an opportunity to serve the whole state. I've spent my entire career working in drinking water and specifically with regulations and water quality for 20 years. And this is just a really big honor to be able to serve the entire state, and I hope to just be able to continue in Ken's legacy and work collaboratively with the other divisions within DEQ and also the water agencies. We've got a great drinking water industry in Utah, and I hope to continue that forward.
Wonderful. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. With that, we'll go ahead and call to order then our drinking water board meeting for January 13, 2017. Let me make a roll call. My name is Paul Hansen. I think I'm here. Betty Naylor.
Here.
Brett Chenault.
Here.
Tage Flint. Roger Friedel.
Here.
Alan Matheson. Brad, actually, we'll have you. Brad Johnson.
Here.
David Sackerson. David Stevens.
Here.
And Mark Stevens. So we do have a quorum of six, so we'll continue on. One of the first things I'd like to do would be to come around to the front and invite Ken Bousfield, if he'd please come up.
I'm going to put you front center. Alan mentioned that Ken retired here the end of last year, and it's one of those actions that in my mind is good and bad. I've had the pleasure of working with this man for over 25 years in my interactions with him, and I've always appreciated his professionalism, his leadership, and his concern for the people of the state of Utah. So as a board, we'd like to present him with a very small token of appreciation for you. It's heavy, though. So I just warned you. And it reads, with appreciation to Ken Bousfield, it has been said, if you want to go far, go together. You have demonstrated this principle exceptionally well, and your impact will be felt for generations to come. Thank you for your unfading support of the Drinking Water Board. Ken, we wish you the best, and wish you a welcome home. We'll always have a seat for you here. But we wish you the best in all you do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Second.
All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. The minutes are approved. Let's move right on then to the Financial Assistance Committee report. And Betty, we'll turn this time to you.
Okay, Michael. First on the agenda is our status report.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. The status report, we will begin with our state loan funds. We currently have just over $4 million in the fund. Over the course of the next 12 months, we're expecting another 4.8 to come in, giving us a total of almost $9 million over the next 12 months to allocate for drinking water projects from the state fund. Once again, as I have the last couple of board meetings, I'd like to call your attention to the hardship grant fund. The last, the last number there in the purple highlighted area. The hardship grant funds for the state are still $737,000 in the red. So we have been shifting all of those projects that need additional subsidization to the federal program until we can get that number back up into the black. The next page is a list of those projects we are currently working with on the state program. We have five that have been authorized and are in various stages of loan closing to provide the money for them to begin their work. There are a number of planning loans and grants that have been made available to other various cities throughout the state. And we are currently disbursing funds for Helper City and the Daggett County Dutch John projects. Are there any questions on the state program?
When do you anticipate that we'll be back in the black on the hardship?
If you look at that first page, we are expecting over the course of this coming year approximately $775,000 in interest payments. All of that goes into that hardship grant fund. So by the end of this 12-month period, we will be approximately $50,000 back in the black on the state program. We will probably continue to defer those projects that require subsidy to the federal program until we build that up to probably $200,000 or $300,000 to give us the cushion that we like to have there.
Other questions?
I have one quick question. Under the planning grants, could you walk us through the reasons that the Henryville, size of the Henryville grant is 10 times higher than all the rest?
Yeah, that actually is not a planning loan. That is the $345,000 transmission line replacement project that the board authorized for Henryville. That was the total project cost of that was closer to almost $700,000. Henryville came to the board, and staff recommendation at the time was half loan, half grant for that project. Henryville, pled their case at the time, and the board authorized only the grant portion of that, so the $345,000 grant. So that's why that's there instead of basically down in the loan, because there really was no loan with that project.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, moving on to the federal program. Currently we have just over $26 million in the fund. Over the course of the next 12 months, we're expecting an additional $18 million to come in, both from our federal capitalization grant, repayment stream, and interest on investments, for a total of almost $45 million in the program fund for federal projects. Again, the hardship grant funds are at negative $250,000. Over the course of the next year, we're expecting $334,000 to come in interest payments that will, or excuse me, not interest payments, hardship and technical assistance fees that will go into that fund. So by this time next year, the hardship fund for the federal program will be about $90,000 in the black. And again, I'd like to remind the board that this is not the principal forgiveness portion that the board is allowed to authorize for projects. This is the hardship grant fund that typically goes for planning on the federal programs. The second page again is a list of the projects that have been authorized by the board, and staff is in various stages of working with these different projects to close those loans. There are a few on that list, two in particular you mentioned that will be deauthorized today. Others that we've got the planning advances on and that are currently in process and under construction. Are there any questions on any of those projects or on the federal program in general?
Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to the next item, project priority list.
Okay, I need to back up a step. I'm sorry, I was going to do something before I got into all this. I wanted to take a moment and introduce a new engineer that we have with the construction assistance section. You'll remember that last year we lost Gary Kobzeff. He went to the engineering section, and Nathan Hall became the district engineer out in the basin. Introduced Lisa Nelson last board meeting. This board meeting, I'd like to introduce Sam Drenley. We hired Sam from the private consulting engineering section of their sector. He's agreed to come to work for us. We're very happy to have him. He comes with about 10 years of drinking water infrastructure experience from the consulting side, and he is very quickly learning the SRF program and how to run the funded part of things that he's been doing for a long time. So we're very happy to have Sam on board with us. I just wanted to take a moment to introduce him to the board.
Welcome, Sam.
Welcome. We'll give you one assignment: to cut federal regulations. Okay, Michael, continue with our project priority list.
Yes, thank you. There is one new project being added to the project priority list. Woodland Mutual scored 28.9 points on the list, and their project consists of spring redevelopment, a new tank, as well as distribution and transmission lines. The Financial Assistance Committee has recommended that the Drinking Water Board approve this updated project priority list.
Okay, and although we will not be having it on the agenda today, we are adding it
yes.
to the list for future,
for future
references.
Yes, thank you.
I just have a question. What can you tell me about this mutual company? Where are they located? They're a private company? Or?
They are a private company. This will be a federal project. I am drawing a blank as far as where they are located.
In the state of Utah.
They are in the state of Utah.
Good enough.
They have been before the board previously.
See, the name
projects.
Sounds, the name sounded familiar. But
yeah.
Somebody's got Google somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, they are a private company within the state, I believe.
Camas? I just looked it up.
Okay. All right. I was going to say Summit County, which is close, but anyway.
Okay, do I have a motion to add the Woodland to our project priority list?
This is Paul, so moved.
And a second?
Second. Shevin.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It has been added to our project priority list. The next item under our agenda, we have no state requests for funding, so we'll move to the federal. And Michael, you have the first item with Wellington.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Wellington City was authorized a financial assistance package of $1,063,000 in loan and $212,000 in principal forgiveness back in April of 2016. They, at that time, were looking to build a brand new storage tank and the accompanying appurtenances to that tank, to distribution line, and et cetera. Since that time, they have changed the scope of that work. They are now looking at refurbishing this tank, rebuilding the lid on the tank. It's a steel tank. And they have actually approached the Community Impact Board for the funding for that project. Therefore, they do not need the Drinking Water Board funds at this time. And we are requesting, the Financial Assistance Committee has recommended, that the Drinking Water Board deauthorize the Wellington City project.
Okay, the board has heard the recommendation. Do we have any questions or discussion? I'll accept a motion.
I will make the motion that the Drinking Water Board deauthorize the Wellington City project.
And a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, moving on to our second item listed under federal is Liberty Pipeline Company, and we have Rich for that.
Yes, thank you. Liberty Pipeline was authorized a loan to drill a new well of about $700,000 back in 2015. We've received a request to deauthorize the letters included in your packet. So that would be the recommendation to deauthorize that.
And I have to say, I really enjoy reading that letter because I think it comes straightforward and put it to the point that in small water companies, there are too many paperwork regulations to go through for them to do a project if they're federally funded. Do I have that correct? But I did enjoy it. Thank you for having that letter in there. Any further questions or seeing none, I'll accept a motion.
How do you make that motion that we deauthorize the $699,000 construction loan to Liberty Pipeline?
And a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Could I just make a comment there? Do you mind?
Yes. Go ahead.
I think this renews. I think a concern that the board has is we have to continue to find legal ways that we can make these federal dollars work for all systems. You know, we've spent quite a bit of time in the past trying to look at points and interest rate reductions and different things. And I think I would just invite and challenge our new director, no pressure, to see if there are still ways that we can make it more affordable so that we can use these federal funds for the benefit of our citizens. I'll come off my soapbox.
Okay, moving forward then, we have the Cedarview Montwell. Lisa, we invite anyone in the audience who are representing Cedarview Montwell, bring your chairs up. We do ask you to introduce yourselves and speak into the microphone because we do record.
Good afternoon. I'm here with Bobby Drake, the board chairman, Mondi Taylor, the board member, and Aaron Averett from Sunrise Engineering. So I'm here today to present the funding request from the CW-Montwell Special Service District to fund acquisition of tribal easements all at once so as to avoid delay and expedite connections in the future. They would also, should this be authorized and there were funds remaining, they would also like to start preliminary design. So in 2012, the board authorized funding of a new water system for the Cedar View Motwell Service District. And in 2013, the district closed on a bond of $2.128 million at 2.43%. And that project has since been completed. They had anticipated upwards of 100 connections, but for a number of reasons, they only have 59 connections, which has affected their anticipated cash flow. Largely, the decline in the local economy affected people's ability to connect to the system, and there were also some issues with the contractor. But those have since been resolved, and the district is committed to pursuing those anticipated connections. So I don't know if we have the map, but as you can see, it's in diagram one of your packet that peppered all throughout the service area are these tribal lands. And to try to obtain these easements on an individual as-needed basis could significantly delay the project in the future. Right now, the district has a good working relationship with the tribe. They've been working on other projects, and the tribe has expressed willingness to move forward with these easements. So staff explored numerous mechanisms to try and fund this project without further burdening an already burdened district, but recognizing that grant funds are limited. One of the ways staff came up with this was to refinance the 2013 bond, to not extend the term, but to refinance the balance, include the $355,000 necessary to fund the acquisition of these easements, but to keep their annual debt obligations the same. So the intent is that it's the status quo, but they do not have to increase their debt, and they can fund the project. So that was the basis for the recommendation for the board to authorize a refinance of the 2013 bond with the $355,000 project cost for a total funding authorization of $2,474,000 at 1.38% for 28 years, with the option of graduated repayment schedule and no additional loan origination fee. I believe the district would also like to make a few remarks, and then we're happy to take questions.
My name is Bobby Drake. I think it was already mentioned, the board chair came on this project as we were in the construction phase. So first, we'd like to thank you because we've had from past monies granted by you, been able to do a regional plan and also a master plan of the entire area there, which has helped a lot of the other districts come together and coordinate some things like that, looking out in the future as how we're going to affect each other. So the first, as we went and we were going over numbers, we were the proposal that was given. We looked at what would happen as time went on with the current situation and the way the growth is. Well, it's basically exactly the opposite. Things were actually people moving out, and those who are staying are in hard times. We don't anticipate a big growth. We're hoping, the five connections a year, we're thinking we can do that for a few years, but indefinitely to meet, as we was proposed originally, to keep that going perpetually until the grant kind of comes due, or the whole entire loan, comes due, is probably not viable at this point. So as we looked at numbers and things, what we found would, as we're looking at this refinance, what would be most beneficial to us is we could get a 0% on that and then put a flat rate, just a one fixed rate, rather than this graduated. Because whereas we're looking, as we go, this steps up, this repayment steps up, we're not we're going to get to a point where we're not going to be able to meet our obligation on a loan. So our proposal would be to, if we could, as we're refinancing this, put it to a 0% loan and then fixed rate payments. And within that, we could, there are a couple other options, things we would like. We just won't give you our whole entire list here, I guess, as we're doing this and see. One would be to get, just have this a grant for the money that we're looking for. So if we were to have everything the way we would be most beneficial, would be to have the 0% interest and then receive a grant. I don't think that's able to happen for the fact that in order to refinance, we have to have a project tied to that. That's my understanding. And so if we could have the half of the project funded through the grant here, then we can take the other half to the CIB and then put the interest rate at 0%. So that's kind of the proposal or maybe the request, I guess would be a better way of putting it. So do you have any questions?
That's a good question, Betty.
Yes, go ahead.
So I want to make sure I'm following. So is it your intent to go to CIB on half of the $2.4 million or CIB?
We're just talking about the project's
$330,000. So your proposal is to go to the CIB for half of that amount.
Right. Yeah, if we could get half granted from you or a quarter of it granted, one of those. And then, and really probably the biggest is to really refinance that original package and at a 0% and a fixed payment over the remaining 28 years.
So has staff had an opportunity to review this proposal that he is making to us?
About 30 minutes ago, we were presented with this new proposal or with this additional proposal for the refinance at 0%. Without, you know, redoing the numbers right here, looking at the percent of MAGI at the 1.38, they're at 5.23% of MAGI, which I think would, if we were to do this all from scratch, I believe they would be considered eligible for subsidy because they're so far above the 1.75%. But without redoing the numbers, I can't give you an exact percent of MAGI.
What would it do to your project if we were to defer a decision to allow staff to do this and then consider it at our next meeting, which will be the end of February, 1st of March? Does that throw all of your easements and projects out the window?
No, we haven't done anything. So what we have really into this right now is the engineering part of it.
They're fine.
And actually, that's the part of the portion we're putting in. That's not part of this. We've already paid that, about $15,000 that we're putting in of our own money. And so really, I think as far as that goes, that would be very doable.
I think I share the concern you're headed, that I'm a little hesitant to just arbitrarily change the interest rate without an analysis to say,
understandable.
Does it meet the warrants and the criteria? That would be my thought.
I would agree.
And have you made an approach to CIB at this time, or is this in the future also?
Yes, and what we kind of, you know how this is, it's which is the cart and which is the horse, so we're kind of there. So we did present to them, knowing that we were coming to this meeting. At that time, we had not really sat down and scrutinized the numbers like we had this time. When we came up with this, we said, really, this is a broken, the proposal that was presented today by the staff is actually a broken, method, because we're eventually not going to be able to meet that. And so we need something that's, you know, for longevity, something that was going to be viable for long term. And as we said, looked at that, these are some of the solutions we came up with that we're very confident we will be able to go forward and meet.
And if we defer this, would you have the opportunity to contact CIB before then?
Yes. And another thing we also did, we raised the taxes in our area. So we've tried to be proactive, and the 59 is more than we have. We've gone out and continued to get connections, and we plan to. We're still in that process. I mean, that's probably a never-ending process as far as that goes. But we're really trying to be proactive and make this work. Being able to predict what happened with the economy out there, I mean, it was almost like a switch. Our contractor being late made it so that people weren't able to hook up in the fall. By spring, the economy completely reversed out there. And so those additional connections, people are now trying to just, basically survive. And so it's not a priority for them to connect right now.
I know that when this was discussed in the Financial Assistance Committee prior to bringing it to the board, our big concern was the ability to pay.
Well, and that's what really, when we sat down and looked at this and we looked at the proposal, we started looking down the road here, and somewhere between 3 and 12 years, we kind of figure we're going to be running into a problem where we're running, in the red rather than the black, and that's why we're bringing this counter proposal, I guess, if you will. With the fixed payments, we've worked it, and if with what's being proposed here, it's very, very doable. I mean, we don't have any doubts about it working.
Okay, any comments from the board? Paul, you suggested to defer. Would you like to make that a motion?
Based on what I'm hearing, that it would not be an undue hardship on you at this point, it would be my recommendation that we, I don't know if the proper term is table or defer, I'll look for some help, but that we move to the next meeting for consideration to allow staff to fairly evaluate and consider what would be allowed.
That sounds prudent.
And do I have a second for that?
I'll second that.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Can I just ask one more question too? So they will have the chance to go to CIB in February. And so maybe if there was even just a bill of the board as to how the fill for the project and the need for the project is, then we can at least have that general comment, which sometimes CIB requests.
I think from the Financial Assistance Committee, we know the project is a very, very worthy project. And we understand that, you've looked at this, and getting it all together at all the same time is a very worthy project. And the ability to fund, I think that we were pretty consistent on that. The only question we had was the ability to pay. And I think that's what you're trying to address.
And beyond that, we can't make any kind of a commitment. Yes, we would support it or not, but we do have a recommendation from the Finance Committee that is set at what we've seen. So obviously the full board has a discretion to modify or amend that. So very good. Thank you.
Okay. The next item on our agenda is Winchester Hills Switch. And the members of the board should have that before them. Either email to them or pick up here at the meeting.
Cool.
Okay, Rich, go ahead.
So this is for Winchester Hills. They came to us in September. We had an emergency conference call, if you remember. They were well caved in, so the board authorized $427,000 to them for that emergency well. Bids came in, they opened last week, and they came in high. So they are now requesting an additional $160,000 to complete the project. We recommend the same 50-50 loan grant split. So that would be the staff recommendation to the board that they authorize the 160 additional funding. That would result in a total funding package of $587,000 with the same interest rate, 0% for 30 years, where $293,000 would be principal forgiveness and the repayable amount would be $294,000. Their contribution of $197,000 would still apply.
Rich, do you have any representatives here?
No, they're all down from the St. George area. And they asked, and I told them that because of travel, we could handle it.
Okay, questions from the board? Discussion?
Just a comment. It actually makes me feel better because I thought I was the only one drilling extensive wells, so this price actually does seem to be more in line with what I'm seeing around the state, so they are expensive projects.
Any further discussion? Accept motion?
Betty, I'd make that motion that we authorize $160,000 additional funding. This would result in a total funding package of $587,000 with an interest rate of 0% for 30 years with $293,000 in principal forgiveness. The repayable amount would be $294,000. Their contribution of $197,000 still applies.
And did you say the contribution was $197,000?
Yes.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Rich. Moving on, we have other business under the financial portion of our meeting. And Michael, you've got both of them, so Stockton is first.
Yes. These are basically just informational items for the board. Stockton Town approached staff back at the end of 2014, wanting some financial assistance on a project that they had to repair a tank and put some new water lines in. They have since funded those projects in other ways and now are in the process of looking at actually building a new water treatment plant. And so they have withdrawn that application and will be submitting a new application shortly for financial assistance for this water treatment plant. Henryville, the board tabled the Henryville project back in June of 2013. Henryville came to the board asking for funding to build a new tank. We determined at that time that they did not need a new tank. And since then, they've had the issues with their source and their transmission line and other things that have kind of gotten in the way of moving forward with that project. So rather than tabling that project, we just wanted to inform the board that Henryville will likely change that and no longer need that 300,000-gallon tank on the funding associated with it. So just wanted to bring those items to the board's attention. Let them know where those prior projects are at this point.
Basically, they're changing scopes.
Yes, the projects have changed. The needs of the towns have changed, and so those particular projects will be listed in our database as no longer viable. One other thing that's not on the agenda that I thought the board would be interested in, we have recently learned that Congress, in their budget talks and continuing resolutions, have authorized $20 million to the Water Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act, WIFIA. They believe that this $20 million influx of cash for this project will result in about $1 billion of available credit to water projects, drinking water projects, water, wastewater and drinking water projects of national or regional significance. That's one of the criteria for WIFIA. One of the criteria that WIFIA has is that WIFIA money can only be used for 49% of the project. The other 51% has to come from other sources. And the total federal contribution to these projects can only be 80% of the project. So the state SRF programs will have first right of refusal, meaning that the project will have to go through the SRF programs first. If the SRF program can't or does not wish to fund those projects, then they will go to WIFIA at that point. However, the SRF programs can act as co-funders for WIFIA projects as long as we don't surpass that 80% federal contribution to the project. So we'll have to be, if Utah should have any of these WIFIA projects that will be co-funded through SRF dollars, we'll be looking closely to make sure that we don't exceed that, that 80%, which, as you're aware, would not be a bad thing with $49 million in our fund. So we could definitely use some of those larger WIFIA-type projects that are of national or regional significance. Anyway, just some informational aspects and items for the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'll turn the ballot for the meeting back to you.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 6. Amy, we'll invite you to come up. Your timing is impeccable, by the way. So, this will be a discussion on the after-the-fact review policy that was part of your board package. Welcome, Amy. It's good to see you.
Thank you. This is a discussion item, and Marianne, you probably need some help to write up this summary. It's a complicated issue, but yes, get to a level that we think we need to develop a policy within the division to make sure we have a consistent way in dealing with the after-the-fact review. We do have a set of rules that's a 500 through 550 rules. That set of rules specifying how new drinking water facilities should be designed. So then that set of rules require pre-construction plans and specs be submitted to the Division of Drinking Water for review before the construction can begin. So that's supposed to be the right way to do things. However, in reality, in the handout, I gave 3 examples, and this is just 3 out of probably 50 that we have encountered. Many water systems unknowingly, hopefully it's unknowingly, modify their facilities or constructed new facilities without the division's knowledge. And in some cases are the new existing campgrounds or existing subdivisions, all of a sudden they cross the threshold, become a public drinking water system. And at that point, we come, then we start to regulate them. But the infrastructure frequently were put in, 30 years ago, some 50 years ago. At that point, when we try to do a plan review, it's after fact that plan review, we do the best we can. But we still need to verify to the best of knowledge how we can approve these facilities. So we faced some internal challenges, and we also faced some external challenges about how we do, go about this after the fact plan review. I want to explain why the staff will recommend we don't put this policy as a rule. Because I'll give you an example. A long time ago, the Division of Drinking Water had a set of rules that if you construct water lines with these kind of design, we'll give you exception to rule. After several years of implementing that kind of rule, we realized 90% of the water system they were constructing to meet the exception instead of meeting the exact design and construction rule. So back then, the design construction standards for exception were removed because when you lay it out to tell people how to go around the required design standard, that's exactly what people do. Just like water, you go to the least resistance pathway. So in this case, the staff had looked at the situation and say, what if we just put in the rule? And we realized, no, we really don't want to set the rules to tell people how to go around. the requirement. And so we decided we'll keep the 500 series rule the way as it is. All the new constructions, all the proposed modification to the existing facilities have to comply with the existing rule. But we'll have a policy to deal with these after the fact review that pops up, you know, periodically. And then we deal with it on a case by case basis. Even though this type of review will be dealt with on a case by case basis, but we still want to have a consistent way to deal with it, because we have three groups of engineers doing the review, and we want to make sure it doesn't matter who is doing the review, the required coordination and the factors to consider will be the same. So that's the intent of this document. And this document, we still call it a draft, because we want to, you know, review it carefully and solicit input. So now I attach what we have so far. And the first part of the background explains why we do the after the fact review out of necessity. The second part, which is on the lower half of the page one, we talk about what factors the staff must consider if we do an after the fact review. For example, we said we consider whether the facility actually can be approved afterwards. Some facility we may not be able to approve it. It's so substandard, we should not approve it. So, but some facilities, it looks like it meets the intent of the rule. So we have to look at the facility itself. Then we consider whether there are any operational water quality data to indicate there's a history of concerns. For example, if they made some modification to the drinking water lines, and they continue to get bad bacteriological samples in the distribution piping, something is wrong. The water quality data we should take into consideration. And we should consider whether there's any public health risk. For example, if they install fluoridation facilities or chlorination facilities without the adequate ventilation or safety concern, we can approve it. And we will require to have an inspection done by the engineer. At least we can look at what's available, what we can see nowadays. However, this also, we have to look at the complexity of the project. If it's just a waterline project, if it's buried underground, even the engineer cannot tell, you know, what's buried underground. So we have to, you know, look at the complexity of the project. And we look at what available information is we can gather nowadays. And the last one, consider whether continued lack of approval of the facility benefit public health. And I want to explain this. We put it in a way means if by not issuing plan approval and instead we take the compliance route is more beneficial to public health, then maybe that's the way we need to deal with it. And the second sentence, they consider that both action and inaction by DDW may lead to liability, because by not granting the approval, there is a liability on the Division of Drinking Water's part, because we allow a facility continue to operate without the required approval. Or by granting the after-the-fact plan approval, are we taking on liability? So we have to weigh these carefully. And so the last part, the policy, and that's the detail, and I don't want to, you know, put you all into sleep by going through these steps, but just show you that we intend to propose these steps. So within this, the division, we will, you know, include the compliance section, we include the source protection with staff, and so we have a consistent way in dealing with the after the fact review policy. So I guess this is a discussion item, so I present the information. We would appreciate the board members to weigh in and give us a feedback.
Sure. Any comment at this point?
Just two. On page, what we have as 3-4, number 8 and number 9, is $1,000 the maximum fee that may be assessed?
No, I think the number 8, that the history of that dollar amount was the division can have pushed for plan review fee at one point. So we made the proposal to DEQ and was submitted to the governor's office to look at, say, the division will charge a fee for doing plan review. However, during the budget review process, the plan review fee part was removed. There's only one item that was kept on the EQ item. That was the penalty fee for construction without plan review. So our effort assessing plan review fee was defeated, but that item remained on the DEQ budget. It just says per project, the system per project can be assessed up to $1,000. It didn't say up to $1,000, just a fixed number, $1,000.
Okay, and then 9, for projects that DDW cannot issue after the fact for plan approval or operating permit for further compliance action may be taken. Is there any outline for that, or is it just project per project you're after?
At this point, what we intend to do is, after weighing all the information available and all the factors, if the decision is we should not issue after the fact approval or after the fact operating permit, that means this facility should not be in operation period. So we should issue this, you know, tell them to stop using the facility, and if they use the facility, we will assess them points and just take the facility, you know, out of this, you know, remove this facility from the water system. So we use this term, further compliance action, but the intent is to stop the operation of this unapproved facility.
Thank you.
Just two comments on it. I very much appreciate policy point number one, in that the action starts a compliance grace period. We're not immediately attacking and assessing something, because sometimes the information we have may not be correct. So I very much appreciate the fact that there's a 120-day grace period in there that allows them to work with staff and mitigate items that may bring it into compliance with them. The question I had associated with number one is that we're setting deficiency points at set numbers for both facilities and for sources. And I guess my question is, are these specific points, or if I have a small facility deficiency as opposed to a system that their entire facility is in chaos, do they both get 50 points and that's it? Or is that where we go into the further compliance and then we shut them down? I mean, I guess I'm just trying to follow on, where do we tie that in, and is there any consideration for size and challenge of 50 or 200? Because those points are significant for systems.
Yes.
And they should be. I mean, they were intended to help generate compliance and save drinking water, but that was just the other thought I had was...
I'll answer the question based on what I know of. Let me check. Patty's not here, but I'll answer based on what I know of, and I'll verify that with Patty. These two items, 50 deficiency points for facilities and 200 deficiency points for sources, they are listed in the R3094 400 rules. And so what I understand is the 50 efficiency points for facilities is, my understanding is we don't, if you have five facilities, it's still 50 points. One facility is still 50 points. We don't double count that. That's my understanding. I would like to check with Patty Fowler whether did the rule language say 50 points or did the rule language say up to 50 points? I'm not sure. I think it's 50 points.
I think it is as well.
But 200 points, it's a fixed number, I know for sure. There's no language say up to 200 points. It says if you use a source that the division cannot approve of, it's 200 points, period. The reason is most of the water systems, they have a threshold of deficiency points, 100, 150 points. So the intent is this one deficiency will make this water system become an unapproved water system. The source itself, if the source is questionable, the water system should not be listed as approved. So that's the intent of 200 points.
And then my hope would be that we can remove those points as soon as they're mitigated.
Yes.
That the policy allows, you know, once they've done it, that we don't have to wait for a year or some other period, but we can get those off as an incentive for them.
So if I may, I'd like to explain how the grace period will be implemented. In our database, we have the option of assess the points and attach that item to a trigger date. So for example, if I assess a 50 point deficiency and I said I wanted to become effective in 120 days, so we assess it now, but it's dormant for 120 days and the database will track it after 120 days. If none of the drinking water staff goes in there to remove that deficiency, it will pop up if it becomes effective. That's how it's implemented.
Very good. Other comments? Very good. Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate all you do and your staff to do this. You do a very, very professional job. So.
Okay. So if the board members has any further comments, please let me know. And our intent is when we finalize this, at that time we will provide a copy for the board members as an informational item.
So this doesn't go into the rulemaking. This is just a policy statement.
That's right. And as I explained earlier, it's intentional that we didn't want it to become a part of the rulemaking.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item 7, Dale, we'll invite you to come up. Dale, here.
Well, I got past
you. You're Dale?
Yes.
I guess I didn't see Dale, did I, earlier? I'm just following the agenda, Terry. Just pay no attention to me.
Dale sends his apologies. He's laboring away at a conference down in San Diego. So,
okay.
Yeah. He assured me he's working hard. So I'm going to take his place today. You guys, I guess we'll bring him up
for
the third time. On behalf of Rural Water, Terry Smith, by the way, I'd just like to welcome Director Owens and look forward to working with her and continued association with the drinking water staff. I think it may be overstated to say that we like to think of ourselves as the right arm, but at least we like to think we're an appendage of and there to help the drinking water systems work, especially with the smaller ones spread throughout the state, and you know, save them a lot of time and travel, and reach out to those operators too. I just quickly jotted down some things that kind of I've been working with. Mostly it was filling the space under the Christmas tree this year, I have to admit that, this last season. But we did a bunch of training for the end of the year for CEUs. It seems like that's always a popular item, kind of like kids at Christmas. All these operators are are discovering that they need to pick up a few more CEUs to recertify. I went back and did my cross connection recertification again. Seems like I've been doing that forever and ever, and I let it lapse, so I had to go back and start the whole process over. Working on mass certification presentation. I do the training on the operator certification, the math end of it. And we've had this presentation, it's probably 20 years old, and it's starting to look pretty dated. And so working with Kim Dykes, since I teach that, I'm going to hopefully make one that in my opinion will work a little better and be look a little better printed out in our books and things. So doing that, I did a technology presentation where I actually created a presentation. It seems like water operators, I've always really liked computers and electronic stuff, and when I came to work here, I thought that was something that all operators liked, and I found that they don't. And so I created a presentation and sort of kind of from A to Z and nuts and bolts, kind of taught that a couple of times, and it was pretty well received. Just basically about viruses and encryption and how to protect your email and things like that. And so put that together and taught that a couple of times in this last couple of months. Funding needs. Rural Development has asked us to help them with our circuit riders to go out and as they're making their on-site visits, gather information that we can bring back to them. And I don't see any reason why we can't do the same for the SRF and Michael and the Drinking Water Fund as well. And so we're working on that. We're going to put a form where we bring that data. It won't not only be our circuit riders, but it'll be myself and Brian and some of our other staff as well as we're out there. And so we ran that form past Michael, and I think we got some feedback on that. And so we're going to go hopefully bring some things back that will help them. I did a water rate study for Stockton, and I was a little surprised to hear that today. I'm going to have to revisit the mayor, Whitney, and see what's going on there. When I gave him that water rate study at the time, he indicated, well, for some personal reasons, I can't deal with it right now. So maybe things have changed. I've talked to him a couple of times, and he hasn't expressed anything different, but I'll have to twist his arm a little bit. And I am working with several systems, Tokerville, Weaver's still kind of on the back burner. They contacted me the other day and said, now what do we need to do again? And I told them and said, okay, we'll get it to you, so we'll see. And then I went over and worked with Hanksville a little bit. Some of the things, well, I actually went to their public hearing and kind of talked to some of the public there about what they're doing and the reasoning. You know, sometimes they need to hear it from a third party rather than the engineer that they've hired and the town council. So I think they're doing some good things there, and so hopefully I smooth that over. And that's kind of where I'm at right there, just those things.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm Brian Petit. I'm a compliance circuit rider for Rural Water. I've been, the last couple months, I've been doing we had scheduled a lot of cross-connection certification training, and so I've been instructing that. I instructed Terry in his last class that he referred to, and he sat in the back, and he wasn't always...
You passed?
Yeah. Okay, good. So evidently I'm a good instructor, but he wasn't a very good student. He sat in the back of the room and he asked a lot of tough questions. We had fun with it. That was good. So with the turnover of operators and just management of a lot of these smaller systems, they end up having a violation for a lack of training in cross-connection control. So I've been just inundated with requests for on-site training. So I've been going to places, doing the backflow 101, you know, one-on-one with those folks, getting that taken care of so they can get their compliance points removed in cross-connection control. Been working a lot in this short amount of time with some ETT systems, if you're familiar with that, EPA targeting tool. point system. Some of those systems that you've given, one system in particular I wanted to talk about, Wooden Shoe Water Company, I believe they've come here for some loans with this board, but had an interesting conversation with both their operator and their one of their board presidents, and I was quite pleased to see such a long process come to fruition with that system. They finished their new source. They had a UDI spring, and they finished a new well. It turned out to be a really good well. They've replaced their entire distribution system, and they actually, really good thing they did is they took the spring water system and separated that from the new culinary and made that a secondary irrigation system. So I was quite pleased to hear that. I think they're not too far away from getting all their points off and all their operating permits for that. So it was nice. It was good to hear that. And with that being said, I just want to thank the board for all you do. And it's nice to go out to these systems and hear that when they've come to you. I always hear good things, and I haven't always been in this process, but I continue to hear good things have happened through the years with systems getting loans from you folks. So I just wanted to thank you for that. Hopefully continue this. We want to, you know, keep drinking water safe, and overall we're doing a really good job in this state. And so I just want to thank you for that.
Likewise, appreciate all you do as well. Thank you.
Well, good to be with you again. I'm Kurt Ludwig, a development specialist at the Rural Water Association. And sorry, Betty, I don't have a joke. I've been scratching my head trying to come up with one, and I just can't make it happen. I've been trying to remember what I reported to you last time, because I want to make sure that things line up right. You know, No, I'm just kidding. When Terry mentioned going over some training presentations and making some changes and so on, I've been kind of doing a little of that too, especially through December when it's a little bit harder to catch up with people and get on their agendas and so forth when all they want to do is have Christmas parties. I teach the safety and security at the operator certification and classes, and I have been going through those presentations trying to update those and make a few changes, and maybe you'll make those presentations a little bit better as well. And also spend some time putting together presentations that I'm going to make down at the conference in February, 1st March, whenever that is. I guess we should know when it is. But
February 27th.
Brian, they just tell me when to go.
Just show up.
Yeah. Anyway, on the development program with the counties, as I think I told you last time, my primary focus has been the central, what we refer to as the central six county region that falls under the Central Utah Health Department in Ridgefield. That's Sand Heat, Sevier, Juab, Miller, Paiute, and Wayne counties. The health department board directed us the last time we met with them to move forward with the public hearing aspect of the process on this non-public system rule, you know, that we're trying to get done for the real small little developments. And they directed us to take that back and do that through the various county planning commission meetings. And we've started that process. We've been to a couple. There's a couple of county commissioners that's for some reason dead set against this. And they're seems like they're doing all they can to throw a wrench in the plans. It's Miller County. For some reason, they're even trying to get us to not be able to get on the planning commission's agenda to do this public hearing thing that was directed by the health department board to do. So we're trying to work our ways, and when I say we, I mean myself and John Sharp here, the district engineer, and Nate Saleem, the new director of the health department. We're trying to figure out how we can make this work, even if the objections or the stumbling blocks that those two commissioners are laying before us. So that's the immediate challenge right now. It seems like, as with most things, this isn't moving us forward as fast as we had hoped it would. You know, we've been working on this for quite a while. But I think we're still making progress, and I'm confident that it will still happen. As far as the board members of the health department in general down there, I feel like we have their, without a question, we have their support, you know, maybe with the exception of one or two. It's just a matter of getting through these hoops and getting finalized. I had hoped that we would have it done by now. I had hoped that we would have it done before the end of the year, last year, and it just didn't happen. But we're getting there. It's just gonna take a little more time. And when we meet down in St. George, I'll give you the same report, because we won't have it finished by then. But hopefully by then we will about to have met with all of the planning commissions. I've got the rest of those scheduled, and I think by then we'll at least be moved forward that much more. But anyway, with that, you know, then like I've told you before, there's several other counties where I've been working with the health departments and the planning commissions, and I think we're getting a little progress made towards hopefully doing some similar things in those counties, particularly Box Elder, Summit, Wasatch. They seem to be warming up to the idea pretty good. With that, just thanks once again for all of your help and support. Thanks to the drinking water staff as well. And I guess we'll see you in St. George, unless there's something you want to say to me.
I think we're good. Any questions to that? Yes.
I'm just going to ask. I know we're getting kind of short on time, but I was just kind of curious. Just, Terry was available to worry. He could come up and comment. You know, we love a river water. Take some money to buy some leak detection equipment here a year or so ago. I just thought maybe it might be good to have a quick update on that.
Sure. On the leak detection, yeah.
I'd be happy to talk on that. Not much to say about it yet. We ordered, and the guy came down and did the training, and I told you this once before, so it may sound a little familiar, but after a couple of days, he finally had to admit to us that that thing was not working. It appeared to work cosmetically, but it wouldn't give us the data that we needed. And so we got some really good training on how it ought to work. He took it back with him, and I don't know. They must build those things to order. That's all I can say, because it took, I'll bet you, at least 4 months before we finally got it. I got a new one back, a new one. It wasn't the same one. So in that short amount of time before winter set in, and we have, you know, operators aren't really interested in doing that, we used it on, I think, three systems. Fillmore, Jake used it on a couple up north, and I can't tell you which ones those are. And I was a little bit on apprehensive that the report was going to come back, you know, that thing just voodoo and it doesn't work. Because, you know, they cautioned us that on plastic pipe, it's not as good as metal. And, you know, most small systems do have the PVC. We feel like it's working real well. It seems to, yeah, plastic pipe is still a little bit of a challenge. It takes a little bit more time, but I think it's going to be a good tool for us. Of course, we're hoping to get out there this spring and put it to work. Brett's got a leak. He was wanting us to maybe come help him with, so I think Greg's going to go over there next week and see what he can do. But initially, just in a real short run, it looks like it's going to, and it's proven technology. It's been around forever. It's nothing new, but and as good as it is, it's still not perfect. So hopefully, you know, we talk a lot about energy, efficiency, and things like that, but the very first thing you want to do is tighten the system up and you know, look at the water in versus the water out. And so hopefully this spring we'll get back on the road and put that thing to use.
Thank you. Appreciate all you do. Just a reminder, that conference is February 27th and March 3rd, so put it on your calendar.
Okay, I'll try to be there.
And just an editorial comment, as I walk around and visit with people at the conference, I'm continually reminded of the good work Rural Water does, and also staff. Staff does a tremendous job down there with the city, so thank you. That's it. Look forward to seeing you.
Most of that's out of fear of Shannon.
Well, we are, but don't tell her that.
Yeah, she makes us do it.
Never show your fear. Never show your fear. Very good. Moving on, you'll note in your packet there was a change in our board schedule. There's a conflict on November 10th, so it's proposed that we adjust that meeting to Friday, November 3rd, just to avoid that conflict. I would propose that we do this formally and accept a motion then to accept that revised schedule.
So moved.
I have a motion by Betty and a second by Brett. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
I indicate aye also as well, so we'll make that change. And then just want the final note that our next scheduled board meeting will be held at Rural Water in St. George on Thursday at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. So to all board members, if you'll make sure that you check your schedules, I encourage you to go. It's a great, great conference, good meetings. Personally, I like taking the meetings out to the people, and that's a great opportunity to meet a lot of people and show them what the state has to offer. So with that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
And a motion by David.
Second.
And a second by our good mayor. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.